Hello and welcome to Intertextual Experience, where we're transfixed by the announcement of our 36th guest, Chad Elkins. How are you doing today, Chad?
Hey, I'm doing great. Good morning, Ron. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic as well. Really excited to talk to you about some things, and I think eventually we'll kind of get to why I'm so excited and what was prompting these thoughts, but yeah, I'm ready.
Let's talk about some things. Let's do
All
it.
right. So speaking of things, it's kind of an eclectic assortment of questions, and I feel that it kind of matches the breadth of what you're doing at 25th Century Games. And I also think and hope the questions will kind of capture the ethos of your company as well. But before we get to some of that, we'll start with my sometimes opening question, and that's what's an early memory that proved formative in your love of board games, and or what's a recent memory that's reaffirmed that love for you?
Oh wow, that's getting deep right
I
off
know.
the bat. We're getting like transformative here. All right.
Transformative, yes.
I don't know about recent. But yeah, I think what really I think got me deeper into board gaming as a hobby. I've been playing games for way longer than I've been making them, right? And so yeah, I'd kind of dabbled in some of the, obviously I grew up as a kid playing all the typical IP roll and move junk, like every TV show and movie had a board game based off of it, right? So, but yeah, I'd somehow just ended up playing Catan with some friends, I think, and which was fine. It was interesting. It kind of showed me things were different than like a Monopoly roll and move type of situation. But really, it wasn't until it was kind of the height of the zombie craze in the US. Walking Dead was on TV, and obviously Atlanta is a was a hub, for the original shooting location for season one, and shot nearby for the other seasons. But Flying Frog, which is a publisher, it was still around, made a game called Last Night on Earth, and it was really just a I guess I hate to use the term Ameritrash because it sounds derogatory, but it is a just run around a map battling zombies and going into buildings and stuff. And what was cool about it was that it they used photography for all of the cards and all the and artwork in the game and like weapons and stuff. And it just kind of played out like a very bad B movie, which I'm a huge horror B movie fan. So some friends of mine here in the neighborhood where I lived got together. Like I bought the game, and it had all these campaign scenarios in it, which I'd never seen and done before, obviously, because it just was like a relatively new thing. And so we all were like, "Oh, let's get together every week and play through them." And so we started meeting and playing through the different scenarios. And then all of a sudden, like that kind of spawned into other people like, "Hey, I got this other game I can bring too. We can play that as well after we play a scenario." And the next, so it just kind of the whole thing kind of snowballed from there, but the getting together of the group and kind of really starting to get entrenched in board games really was rooted around a pretty fun, just goofy zombie fighting game, which is probably different. A lot of people are like, "Oh, I played Magic for 15 years or whatever," but I've actually never played Magic and like never played one hand of Magic. So my entry is a little different, but that was the basis for it.
Oh, that's awesome. So I guess a quick follow-up question to that too then is that group that kind of seemed like your interest snowballed together with, is that still a similar or same group that you're playing with now?
So the group has evolved, as far as people-wise, just people have moved and come and gone. But still, I still have a weekly neighborhood game group that meet every week, and so it's and that started there, from that thing.
Oh, that's
And that's
fantastic.
been gone. I mean, at this point now, it's over 10 years because they just had the 10th anniversary edition of Last Night on Earth recently. So yeah, it's probably, I don't know how many years now, 12, 13 years.
that's really cool. 10 years of your game group. I think the idea of years then is going to tie into, well, the next bit, and that's about your company and centuries. Not you're at a decade, not quite a century in that game group, but I was poking around a little bit and I found like a little snippet from an interview that was talking about the kind of origins or genesis of your name. But I'm still a little bit curious about your name and like what how that came about, 25th century games.
So really it's kind of I'm a big sci-fi fan. I watch a lot of old sci-fi, despite my wife's displeasure and seeing me watch that stuff late at night. I just watch it late at night when she goes to bed. But like 1950s and 60s and stuff movies. And I don't know, I think the you watch all these old films, they're always like are set, centuries ahead of what it was then, and flying cars and all this kind of stuff, right? And so I think it, I don't know why the 25th century thing was just kind of a date in a future. There was just a lot of different like shows and movies that just use the 25th century. It's like they're like, oh, this is happening in the 25th century. Like Buck Rogers is a famous one for that. And obviously there's been a Duck Dodgers in the 24th and a half century, right? But yeah, it was I just randomly picked it. I wanted some kind of sci-fi-ish sounding thing. The first game we're making was a sci-fi, space little shooter thing. Yeah, really no other reason than that. And it just kind of stuck. Didn't really think much about any other implications around that. It was just like, oh, we're making a space arcade shooter type of a card game based on an IP from a mobile video game. And I'm like, well, let's make it a spacey company name, and not thinking about, 90 games later and it would still be there kind of thing.
Hey, well, 90 games later, and yeah, the names are interesting in general, but I think that it strikes a lot of like in-betweens where, it's easily memorable, it sounds good, like coming off the tongue, and yeah, I don't know, I like it, so, and I like that story too.
Yeah, it just happens also to be alphabetically more at the top of the list, which is also
Yeah.
indirect benefit for that. So when you go like the BGG previews or the Gen Con previews or whatever, like we're always at the top because they alphabetize the numbers before they do the letters, and none of that was anything that was intentional, but a good byproduct.
So you're
So.
telling me that if I need to come up with a publishing company name, I have to find like what comes before numbers, like
Yeah, or like a lower number, be like six games, or something, like seven games,
Zero Games
Yeah.
Publishing Company. Oh, that is funny. All right, cool. Well, it's been cool. It would have been cool for you to have been the show's 25th guest, but alas, we're too far in the future for that to be true. Anyway, I
Well,
think it
have you
is
back for your 250th? How about that? That we can
250th.
do.
Okay.
Which even so, I will point out because like it's funny how often I'll get people that have like known about our games and stuff for a little while, and they'll mention it on Twitter or X or Sky or whatever. They'll be like, "I literally just noticed the rocket in your logo. Like after seeing your logo for years, all of a sudden, I just really figured out that there's like an embedded rocket inside it."
Yeah.
So that's so if you're now that if you didn't know it was there, now you won't be able to unsee it. So
Watch true. Well, something we'll get to later. I'm not sure like how much I was in tune with that, but I was looking at a lot of stuff on the web store because we, well, I guess it's coming out now. Might talk about it later. We're in a little bit of communication on Blue Sky that you just mentioned. About some stoneware mugs. And so I was looking pretty in depth at those, and a question will come out later, but especially this well, 2025 one, that the rocket is like even more pronounced in there with the
yeah, I think
big
if it was last year or this year, I switched to a the medallion on the Stoneware mug switched from square to circle, and I think in the circle it just seems to pop more, I guess maybe, but I think it also has a it's also a ring around in the it now. We modified the kind of, it's called a medallion on Stoneware mugs, the external thing that kind of sits on the mug, but yeah, so that was, I think it shows it a little more, indirectly, same exact, thing, but it just happens to pop more.
Yeah, I've got one here. I'll show you. This is from, so I'm in Wisconsin, and this is from the Ice Age Trail Alliance.
Oh, nice. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
I actually do have my coffee right here with the mug.
Oh,
There you
look
go.
at that. That's going to say the 2025 one right there. So
Yeah,
there's.
these are made, I want to say it's, I'm blanking on it now. They're handmade in Michigan or Minnesota. It's one of the two. But they're handmade in the US, by a potter. Yeah, they're beautiful. They did great work. So every year we do a, at the end of the year, I'll pick a new mug shape and a new glaze combination. And so I'll do like a really small run of them and from the web store and just for me to have at the office and stuff. But so they're kind of limited in that, like, they only make one batch of them, and then that, and we'll change it every year. So if people want to try to collect them all, you certainly could. I guess if you're really into Stoneware mugs, I love Stoneware mugs, so that's kind of why I do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get the stoneware mugs questions out of the way. We'll do a little bit of time traveling, which I think is on par with futuristic stuff, right? But you said you really love the stoneware mug. I guess this is a very odd question. It wasn't on my kind of pre-question script thing, but what is it about a nice handmade stoneware mug that you like?
I just got, I don't know, just like got nice heft to them. They feel substantial, and like, and they just, I don't know. Regular coffee cup mugs are fine, but like, there's something about this nice, just kind of kiln-fired piece of pottery, you drink out of. Yeah, I think it's just purely that. I like the glaze on them, just is nice. They're just a good mug. I like to keep coffee warmer a little bit longer than like using like a, obviously you can use like a thermal dual, whatever they call type of mugs, like, the plastic metal ones, whatever. But I don't know, so something nice and old school about that. I also just like supporting that business. They employ a bunch of folks here in the US and at their factory and or operation, whatever you call it. But and they're really nice people to deal with, and every year that we have conversations with them, my account rep, and we're like, oh, what's, is there a new shape, is there some new glaze combinations, what we think will look good, so it's just a fun little process and something different than making a game every year.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah, it's kind of, well, again, that wasn't really thinking about it too much, but yeah, like you said, I think, yeah, they definitely do a nice job of that insulation as well. And I think some of them, even more so, kind of like the 2023 one, not kind of like ours are a little bit like more wide at the top, but the ones that have more of that width at the bottom,
Right.
they seem to
Yeah, kind of
trap
like
in.
Hershey Kiss type base. Yeah.
Yeah, they seem to trap in the heat really well. I've got a couple of those that I like too. Do you out of the unless you've when did you start this? Because on the store there, it's going from 2021, so there are five up here. Did you start in 2021, or did you just sell out of the ones from before then?
I think that is the start was the. Yeah, I think they're all still up there. I think I only have like one or two left of the 21 model. I think I bought a lot more of that one, not knowing how many I was going to sell, and then
Yeah.
kind of like honed in what the right number was over the years. But yeah, I think it was 21 was the first one. It's like a dark blue. It's like a kind of a curved out kind of ball shape kind of mug, which is it's nice. It has like a nice top lip to it when you drink with, from it.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, I don't know. I think that's cool too. Like all the different shapes and contours. I feel like, with the medallion that you mentioned, they just have a lot of different hold possibilities. Like you can hold the lip, you can hold by the medallion. You
Yeah, the 22 one, the 2022 one is a 22 ounce mug. I kind of just did that for fun because it was 2022, and so it is the biggest ones. That's more like a beer stein, I guess, more than anything else. But then the yeah, then they kind of most of the time, like one of my deal was like a 12 ounce, but like I try to stick to like the 14 or 16 ounces because it's just a nice size.
Well, that's great. Well, I mentioned in my comment that when I make an order from the store that I'll have to pick up at least one of them and add to my collection,
Yeah, they're good. They're
but
nice. You can even put them in the oven. Not that I do that, but you can like it's not like a normal coffee mug. You can do all kinds of things with it. So,
Yep. Yeah, they've got character. I think I mentioned, I don't know, when you can see the ones that get the little bit of cracks and like the weird coffee stains in there, just shows how they age. Obviously you don't want stuff to crack, but
yep.
it happens. Okay. Well, okay, going back to a general order. Oh, yeah, I think this was like in the middle of a question, but it is okay. It is 2025, so it is neat that we get to talk about 21st century games in this year. So I think you mentioned, did you say 80 or 90 games later? But I'll wrap that into that. But the initial question with this line of questions is just going to have you reflecting on the state of 21st century games in the year 2025.
I'm sorry, what now? The
Okay, so. All right, yeah. Well, I was all over the place, but basically the short of it is just like a you reflecting on the state of 25th century games in 2025.
Again, I mean, I think there's always, kind of every year, kind of think about what it is you want to try to accomplish, for that year, what you're really going to kind of put out there that year, or even just kind of shifting just overall business, mindsets. I mean, I think the obviously when I started out releasing a lot fewer games, I mean, that was just part of the natural evolution of just growing. And then actually, even early on, localization was still a key piece of that. The first game localizing, again, called Space Explorers, which came from a Russian company. Which was kind of one of the first games that kind of really, did well for us. But yeah, I think like every year I'm like, well, do we do more localization work, less localization work, do more homegrown stuff? What's the product mix going to be? Do we try to every year? It's like, you try to put out two big games and several small games. You want to try to do all small games this year. A lot of that sometimes it's just what the market's bearing at the time. Obviously, it's you can't predict 100% the future of what's happening, but you have to kind of sometimes roll with some things. Kind of every year reflect on like, okay, well, it's this year is that we're going to ship the small box stuff because it's more inexpensive because of potential tariff problems and things like that, or do we keep pushing forward? What's the economy going to look like? Are people going to be buying $50 games? Are going to be buying, are people going to want to try to like reserve that capital because of other, extrinsic reasons? And try to like, okay, well, I'm gonna budget more and buy less games, or I'm gonna buy cheaper games. So, really, you have to almost kind of reflect every year based on the kind of the current state of the world, more the current state of the board game buying world. What's happening in their surrounding, environment.
Yeah, very, very neat. And I guess in terms of kind of a scope of operation, is 25th Century Games just you? Who else is part of the company?
Largely like from largely just me. I do have several like contract workers, who work, some of them are a quarter time, some are half time, some are three quarter time, because they do work for other people as well, or just have other things or don't want to work full time and things like that. So across, if you look at like everybody that that across the board, there's probably another, I guess, five people in addition to me. But for the like day to day, full time, like 100% type of thing, yeah, it would just be me.
That's cool. And that makes sense, as well as what you stated with the way that other people are working for the company. as well, but
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
it also kind of helps. There's a lot of ebb and flow with it too. There's a couple people that work predominantly, kind of full time. But yeah, but it'll burst, right? It depends on the workload. I think sometimes it also there's a lot of work happening at one time, and so the number of graphic designers we have working on something might go from two people to five, then they'll scale back down to two or something. So it's just that it has that flexibility there, through and I have a friend that has an agency with graphic designers, and so I kind of just ebb and flow through taking up his company's time and contracts, and take up more time from them and it contracts depending on what's happening. But yeah, I do a couple of folks that are work regularly, just regular hours every single week.
Cool. Yeah. And okay, this next question, you touched on it a little bit when you were reflecting on, the state of 21st century games in 2025, but you talked about, balancing, homegrown publications and the idea of localizations, but, for being, a relatively, small like operation in terms of like the amount of people like working there, you have published a lot of games, and you have this aforementioned breadth in, doing original publications, doing reprints, and obviously not just like a reprint comes with the territory of like remaking it, and you do these localizations. I guess for people that might be a little less familiar with maybe some of those terms and or kind of what you're doing with them, could you kind of like both describe those processes and how you kind of came into doing them as well?
Sure. Yeah. So let's start with like the difference between the two, right? So we talk about like a homegrown game. Like what does that mean? So like that doesn't mean like I myself am designing it and everything else. I mean, we license designs from independent designers. They typically come in, it's prototype level art, so it's just words on, just text on paper and a variety of things, just kind of just cobbled together things, not final products. And so then we'll take that, then I'll have a contract developer, work on that game, with the designer to kind of refine it, kind of, get it singing to where it's just it's in a place we want it to be, either scaled up or scaled back or just tightened up, which is always it's always a process, always takes a little while. And also is where we start honing in, like what's this game going to be from like a product standpoint, like how expansive are the components going to be, what do they need to be, what's the bare minimum they need to be, try to hit certain price points, because at that point trying to figure out, okay, is this going to be is the weight and the style what we're trying to aim for here? We're trying to aim for a $25 game, or are we trying to aim for a $40 game, and can it support being a $40 game from a gameplay standpoint? So once that's all done, we'll move into, I'll go hire an illustrator, and work with them on what's the art direction and the style and the kind of what's the vibe supposed to relay, right? Like, does it need to look like it's in the 1950s? Does it need to look like it's, some space sci-fi or some retro futurism thing? There's lots of art direction can take a hundred different ways what a game's going to look like. And so that's a process. I'll go hire an illustrator, work with them on like what I think that game needs to look like, and how we bring those components to life. And then from there, then it goes to a graphic designer, who then we're worried about the UX, what's that interface of that game look like. So the illustrator will make the game look attractive and add illustrations and artwork to make it, pop. But it really gameplay itself is purely like iconography driven and UX driven. And so that's a very different skill set from an illustrator. And so you kind of move through that process. Then eventually you end up, with a finished, what will become a finished componentized product. And so that's homegrown. So that's taking it literally from just concept design through final finished product. Obviously the timeline to do that is longer. And certainly the bigger the game, the longer that usually takes, depending on that development time is also a pretty good chunk of it. Then there's obviously play testing with the design UX and modifying the UX. And so it kind of spirals into a much bigger thing. Localization is a term where a game has already gone through that entire process. It is a finished product, and it is a finished product sold in a different country, in a different language. And so that game exists, let's say, in, it could exist in Spanish, right? It was sold in Spain, or French, sold in France, whatever. But there's no English version of it. And so, and that company, that publisher doesn't have, distribution or big English reach, type following. And so what they'll look to do is find an English publisher to team up with to go convert the game into English and then reprint it, re-release it, and for an English market. And so that's what that process is. And so we do that as an inbound thing. So a lot of our catalog is games I just find and enjoy from around the world that I just like. I'm a gamer at heart, and I play a lot of games, and I love finding new games, even if they're not from US companies. And if I like them, I think they're a good fit, and it works out well with the publisher, and they're interested in it, then if I think it's a good fit for the catalog, then we'll bring it in. And then also it on the inverse, right? We have a lot of our titles that get translated and made into, Polish and French and Spanish and Portuguese, and so that's or Korean and Chinese, and that's it's kind of a it's getting more and more popular to see that. Like, you didn't see it a lot 10 years ago, but now I feel like it's the globalization of designs and of games. You're just starting to see that cross-pollination now happening on both sides of the ocean.
Oh, that yeah, and that's like a really cool thing too. Just the ability, like you mentioned, it is definitely popping up more. But the ability for more games to reach more people, more things that have been created in different parts of the world, it just yeah, I don't know. It'll like the globalization, the viewpoints, and yeah, it's only going to make the hobby space better, obviously.
Yeah, and it extends the reach of those designs, and those designers and the publishers that make them now can get their game played by more people than they would have otherwise that they could support on their own with their own kind of internal capabilities. It really is, it's a win-win, and it works. It's really great for me because then I can look at, okay, what's the catalog look like of what we have in the hopper that's coming up homegrown? Do I have a lot of larger games? And so that that's the case, then I might try to go find, okay, well, I really need to find some smaller games to localize because I can fill in that breadth in the catalog of having a mix of things. I mean, like, it's kind of one of those things where I always think about with 25th, we have a very diverse catalog. We have everything from, we're doing more party games, especially with the success of Green Team Wins, and you'll see more party games coming up from us soon. We do a lot of small box card games. We do bigger games, and we're pushing further up into heavier games. And so I think the having this nice big breadth of a catalog, one, it fits me as a gamer because I play things across the full board. There's some nights I just want to sit and play little card games. I want to play 10 card games that take 20 minutes each versus playing 1 2-hour game. So it's me as a gamer, but also we have something for everybody. It's kind of the way I look at it. Like, you stop by our web store, or you come by a booth at a convention, like there's a game in our lineup that fits what you play or your game group, unless you're just very, very niche. I only play 18XX games, or I only play 4X, dudes on a map battle stuff. We don't have that. But otherwise, it's like, no matter what your game group is, or your family or friends, what you like to play, there's something in our catalog that I know you can find that you're going to enjoy.
Yeah, that's awesome. So one of the things I was thinking with that too was, yeah, you mentioned, some of the kind of like different companies that you've or not even companies but places that you've teamed up with. But I know that a couple of your, at least from what I've seen from your recent, 2024 and 25 import collection projects that you have worked a good amount with Salt and Pepper Games, and then, Platy, is that the correct pronunciation?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's plate.
Plate. Oh, there we
Yeah,
are. Oof.
there you go.
All right.
I think I used to call it platy as well, and then I got corrected. I think it's like, oh, I think it's plate. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I normally just write it. I don't normally like say it too much. Especially when I'm talking to to the folks there. I'm emailing it. I don't have to like speak it and say it. But it is kind of funny. You think something like, oh, it's just that's got to be played. You like we made a game. I'm gonna say it wrong first. So Agueda, which was a game about a city in Portugal, we just won a Mensa award for. I always just thought it was Agueda, and then the first time I was on the phone with the organization that puts on the Umbrella Sky project, who we worked with and collaborated with to make the game, they were like, "No, it's not Agueda. Like it's Agda." I was like, "Can you say it again? Like say it slowly, And so yeah, I think it's plate is how it's supposed to be said, but for a long time I did say platy before I learned otherwise. But yeah, so Salt and Pepper Games been a good partner. Done quite a few games from them. Plate is a good partner. Done quite a few games from them. We're in conversations about some other stuff, because they keep making games and so we're in conversations there. And then Mandu is another recent partner, and we've done two games with them, which was Dracula versus Van Helsing and Jekyll and Hyde versus Scotland Yard. Got another project in the works with them as well. So it's nice, and ideally it works well if you can find a partner where you can just collaborate on multiple games. And so people know and can expect, oh, this game 20th Century always does, or does a lot of this publisher's games. Are you going to be bringing in this new title they just announced? And people can kind of like expect it, start to try to figure out and find and know where to find things because of the international and localization partnerships.
Nice. Part of the reason I was thinking about some of those different partnerships is, well, I mean, you mentioned Mandu as well, and I've got that one somewhere behind me too, but the Dracula versus Van Helsing, like the production of that and the box and like the coffin and
Yeah, it's
everything
really cool.
is really cool. And with plate they do, that the L board boxes and things like that. So I guess the question from that then, which well, hadn't really been thinking about too much, is when you do partner up and localize with these groups and are trying to bring these like neat or innovative or just like fun productions and games over. How does that work when you like are capturing like the actual production of it, that physical product?
Yeah, so when you're localizing a title, you can go two different ways. One way is that company itself will manufacture it for you with their manufacturer. So they've already got the process and the templates down, and the manufacturer knows what to do, et cetera. And so you pay them, and then they make it for you, and then you go pick it up and get it over here where it needs to go. The other route is you just get the files, then you print them yourself with your own manufacturer. Either way, I mean, it matter which direction you go. If it's very, very specialized for some reason, the former is better, right? Because they already have the tooling and they've already done it and they know the sizing of what that, like the coffin, for example, that folds in. They know exactly where those cut lines need to be to fold that coffin to hold everything. Or if it's just like a card game, you can make a card game anywhere kind of thing. Usually better to like make that ourselves, and we can commingle it with another shipment and helps reduce costs and allows us to keep that game price lower than it would be if we had to just ship it in independently. But yeah, either way, like it's a collaborative process with the original publisher. Obviously, they look at and approve everything before it goes to print. I know there's a lot of publishers when they localize games, they just take whatever they were given, like English, kind of ESL rule book, and they'll just slap their logo on it and be done with it. Like I've got a team that we actually go through the entire game and treat it as if we were making it. And so we'll rewrite a lot of things in the rule book if we think it could be worded better or organized better. Or it's better subjective, right? What we think is better. We'll even look at iconography and potentially offer suggested changes to iconography or sizing of iconography just based on just my UX UI team that like just does that. They do all the localization work. they've worked on, 100 games, right? Like they know what iconography works better, and they understand UX. And so, and we have our own philosophy around that. And so we'll suggest changes to games, all the time. And actually, what's funny, a lot of times we'll offer these changes back to the original publisher, and they're like, "Hey, can we use this for all the rest of our versions going forward?" And we're like, "Yeah, it doesn't matter." So, like, oh, we didn't think about putting that there, or making this icon different, or changing this and things like that. So it, we don't just, I guess the point is that we don't just slap a logo on it and just print it. I mean, we really do take it seriously, as if, like, is if this was something that we were making from as a homegrown product from scratch, would we do it this exact same way? Now, in some cases, we offer, we ask for a change and get told no for some reason, and then we don't make it, right? But more often than not, the other publishers, will listen to those ideas, like, "Oh, that's a great idea. We actually probably should start doing that going forward in ours." And it's just a collaborative thing. And that's another good thing about having publishers and you work with regularly, and you can have that back and forth dialogue.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's really neat. And yeah, I mean, it was like funny, because it was a genuine question that I really didn't know too much about the process of. And yeah, that's very insightful. And like you said, just having the relationships with some of these publishers, and more than just a few that we mentioned as well, and being able to be comfortable with them and have that dialogue and care from all parties involved, which, I mean, you would assume, but it's obviously just going to make the best product for both of you and all parties involved. So,
Yeah, and vice versa too, right? We've had some games that get tweaked and changed a little bit when they go to other languages. And a lot of times it's either culture things or something just won't translate well, and so they'll completely change something based around that. But yeah, it's everyone kind of has their philosophies and their mind, and like how they approach things, and so it's, you have to assume like that you work with that publisher for a reason, because they know what they're doing and they're a good partner. And if they come back and say, "Hey, for our market, we think we need to make this change," like, you just have to trust them that they know what they're doing and know their market best. And so you allow them, as long as it doesn't break the game or modify anything, you can allow them that flexibility to kind of manipulate that game.
yeah, that's awesome. So, in that bit, we talked about homegrown games for a bit, talked about the localization process, and kind of the last topic or group then would be, well, at least through my line of question, very specific to one game. It's, I think, if my perspective is correct, and the listening audience won't get to see this as it's audio based only. But over both of our right shoulders, yours kind of in the your shelf to your right, and mine right up there, is the game Ra. And well, here's my question. So I'm not trying to uncover some deep secret to put out in the board game space to get stolen from you or anything, but how does one get to publish a Ra?
Yeah, good question. And certainly very fortunate and thankful, to Reiner and the rest of the Kinitsia Games, team. Certainly just didn't jump right into Raw, right? So I had started, I'd reached out to Kinitsia Games about just trying to see, like, "Hey, is there some designs you've got that you think might be a good fit for us? There's some older games you wish, you might want to come back." And we just went back and forth. Obviously, it was still relatively small. Nothing big now, but smaller than I am now. Smaller than the small that I am now. We settled on Tutankhamun, which was another older Egyptian-themed Reiner game, which I'd owned and had on my shelf for a long time. And I was like, "Oh yeah, literally got that game on my shelf right here." So, we started with that as a kind of a redo, or a redux, kind of bring back an older version of that game. And then we also worked on a new game, a new card game called Longboard with Reiner. That was a design, that didn't exist before. And so I guess just through that process, we were working together well. He liked our approach to art and componentry and things with those games, and the rights to Raw, along with several other games at the same exact time, kind of came back from Fantasy Flight. There's like a whole pack of games in this Euro Classics collection that Fantasy Flight had that was like had Raw and like Samurai and Amun-Ra. I'm trying to think what else was in there. There's a few things, and they were all got returned, and so then they were trying to figure out what the a new home, for them after that. And so I think it was just. It's kind of fortuitous timing, right? We'd already done these other two projects that were in the works and kind of completed them. And they were like, hey, we've got some options that have come back to us or any of these of interest to you. And, obviously, Raw was one of them. It's always a fan of the game. I thought it was great. It's one of the best pure auction games ever made. And so I jumped at the chance to do it. And then I was fortunate enough, Ian and I, O'Toole and I had teamed up on it. He was interested in working on it. And yeah, we just went after it, I guess, from there and kind of end up creating what you've got now on your shelf.
Yeah, that's really cool. And like, I guess, I think when you have like a project like that, something that is so renowned in the space, obviously, just with like the rapport that you had built with Reiner and Kenizia Games and having Ian O'Toole on with it and stuff, like, I mean, things are set up to be good, but and be really good. But I guess what are some of the things then that you're thinking as like a like a publisher, manufacturer, well, not manufacturer, but like for manufacturing choices and everything like that? Because I don't know, I just have to imagine that that type of project, people are going to have like opinions, positive, negative, like neutral, like whatever, but it's something that some people really hold near and dear to their heart and will react in ways. But I guess like how do you approach that, like kind of redoing a classic and thinking about what it is that you want to do with the game then?
I think also remaking a game that has already existed, you kind of end up in a place where you kind of end up in like two paths, right? There's the path of this is a top 100 type of a game. Below, I've been around for whether it's a decade or 2 decades, it doesn't matter. But if it's that people by and large think is like perfect and untouchable kind of a thing. That's a very different approach than a game that got released. It's got a lot of mixed reviews and feelings about it. Some things that potentially could be improved to try to update it for a modern audience. If it's like really old, some things you can kind of do to kind of modernize the design a little bit, or just fix some things that people had problems with the first time it was released. That's two different, complete opposite approaches. Raw was one where the game is certainly beloved by a lot of gamers, and there was no interest in changing that design on my part or Reiner's part. Like, there was no, like, that game needed to come back and exist in its current form and just basically just be made available again to the public because it had been out of print for several years. And obviously, if we're starting up, we start over from scratch. Because all we get is the design, so we still have to go. We don't get all the artwork and everything else in the previous version, and so we have to start from ground zero. And there's always different ways to think about the UI of that of a game. And so when Ian and I started talking and having meetings about like, when we're going to go back and revisit Raw, like what do we want it to be? Like, what do we, do we want it to be? What kind of art style do we want it to be? What kind of do we really we want to make? Adding new components that didn't exist in older versions, for example, like the player boards, would fit into that. Like, that did not exist before our version. But from a UX standpoint, the player boards are extremely helpful to not only teach the game, but to organize your tiles and to easily keep track of scoring and like what scores at the end of each epic versus what scores only at the end, because the player board is built to make that feel intuitive. So those kind of quality of life improvements you can make on a game like Rob, I think trying to jump in and finagle with design work, obviously the designer's got to be on board with that, but that can put you in a little bit of trouble, especially if nothing was really, no one thought anything was wrong to begin with, right? But then there's other games where you come back and make a new version of it, and you get the benefit of the fact that an older version existed and people had and people play and people have responded to and talked about and had questions about, or whatever the case. Now you get an opportunity to, like, well, let's go back and fix those things when we make a new version. This is also the same kind of thing we deal with localization. So we localize a game that already has been released. Like, I'll go through and read every single BGG forum post and, like, where people have questions about stuff. Like, oh, like, they didn't understand that in the rule book. And I'll make a note. And then when I'm talking to Joel and Kate, who handle all the UX, kind of in UI stuff on our localization stuff, we'll go through and make sure, like, hey, these are the 15 things that people are had stumbled through. Are these clear now in our version of the rules, or if we address those things or those UI concerns or whatever? So you get that benefit, from an older game. But like we did, like Run 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 was a good example. It's like an older game. It was also localization, but we also changed a lot of the design again. So we actually went back and revisited the entire design with Bruno and Anthony, and worked with them to actually redevelop the game into a completely modified version of it for our new edition of Run Run Run. But that game started out just as a localization project. But in working with the publisher, we're like, what if we actually just modified this design and changed some things to make it, just feel a little different? And they're on board, and we spent a lot more time than we normally would have on a localization project. But the new version of the game, I think, is a lot better than the previous version.
All right. Now that's really neat. It's funny because I had no previous experience with any other versions of Raw. I'd seen pictures, had heard about it a whole bunch. Just some of those ones that had been severely out of print from that line, just not having a ton of experience, not wanting to go second heart hand and shell out $100
Hundreds
or
of dollars
whatever,
for it.
whatever it be. And yeah, I guess through my, like, kind of, well, I don't even know when it was, forever ago, poking around, and didn't even know that the previous versions didn't have that player board, which, like you mentioned, does such a nice job of, like, showing end of round, end of game scoring, and having things set up. And yeah, that's, I mean.
I mean, also, you can go digging into the forums of, I mean, it's been around for 20 years in the BGG forums. I think it was game number 12 or something like that, added to the database of BGG. So now, if you look at the BGG, like, URL string when you're on a game, the number at the end is just a sequential number counter for that number entry into the database. I think Raw is like number 12 or something that was in there. but people had made kind of their own player boards and stuff from older versions. And so it wasn't like the idea was 100% ours, but we saw people were had been doing that and want to say, okay, like, that's probably something we should look at doing, in a mass produced version versus having someone go make that on their own. But yeah, and not everyone's going to be is even going to like the new version of what you do with a and bring a game back. I mean, we first started releasing, we announced we were doing it and kind of released the initial cover, and started sharing, like, what things are looking like. I mean, a lot of people were extremely critical of it, and people just kind of get into, they have something and they just create this, like, world of, like, this is the best thing that it can possibly be because that's what I've been playing for 15 years and this is how it should look and it shouldn't look anything different than this. And when you bring a new version out that looks different, the initial thought for a lot of people is not trying to be open and kind of appreciate it. They just trash it and say it's garbage and it's too bright and whatever. And so, I mean, we Ian and I, neither one of us wanted to make a heavy, dusty brown, sand-ish, kind of palette, Egyptian game, because that's what Egypt and those tombs look like now, but it's not what they looked like when they were first built. When they were first built, they were extremely colorful and very vibrant, and also very Art Deco-ish, what we consider Art Deco now. I mean, a lot of that originated in early Egyptian artwork. And so we made the new version look like things we found in, in tomb paintings and things, and try to incorporate that those type of styles and that kind of vibe and those color palettes as best we could. And some people really like it, and really appreciate what we did with it. And some people are like, no, I'm just going to hang on to my, 25-year-old Rio Grande version or whatever.
Yeah,
Which
well,
is fine, but
yeah.
that's what you like. Awesome. Like, keep playing the game. It's a great game, and if that's what you want in your collection, do it. Otherwise, we've also got an option that you might enjoy too.
Yeah, not that you need my validation, because I know, thousands upon thousands of people did buy your version through the initial project, and then you had a follow-up to that as well. But I'm a fan. I couldn't be happier that I was able to get a copy of it, so
I
thank you.
appreciate that.
Okay.
And of course, now we're about to break, the don't touch the game rule, and then we have an expansion for Raw coming out, this summer, which is the first time that the game's ever had an expansion. So obviously, a lot of people were really, mad about that, and like, oh, the game doesn't need an expansion, and whatever. But
Again, they don't have to play it,
yeah, but don't yeah, it's a thing.
right?
It's like it's, that's we didn't. We didn't just work it into the core game. We remade it. I mean, we remade the game at its core, exact same design. Play the same experience you've always had, and then now, if you want to add like another tile type into the mix that does some very interesting things that don't exist in the game today, and it's an easy addition because just drop in those 20 tiles and go. I mean, it's then, experiment and play with it. And if you don't like it, then you don't have to. But if some people we play tested it with and have seen early and played other early versions with, like really like it, like, oh, I'm just always just going to play with this. Like, there's no reason to not. So it's available. If people want it, then they can access it. If they don't think they need it, then their core game is still totally awesome and can just keep playing it.
Yep. All right. So, okay. I had, well, there's like I mentioned before, I feel like I always do this, but I think I over planned, but that's a typical me thing. So I've got one very quick question. And then I will move it to just kind of like a quick question in a weird subsection of questions, which I had more questions on. And then we'll get to like the wrap up stuff. So we'll start transitioning because are encroaching on that hour mark, and I don't want to have to keep you forever. But we talked about the localization. We talked about the that you've done a couple of import collection Kickstarter projects, but I've got a whole bunch of 21st century games in general, and a lot of them came from the localization of that first 2024 import collection Kickstarter. So in general, my most played 25th century game is from that particular project, and my question
Which one
is,
is it?
oh, that was my question for you. Which one do you think it is?
From the first import
From
collection.
the 2024, the first one.
That's a good. Let me see. Let me just go look at it and see what all was in that one. Let's see. I don't take you for a dexterity game. I would say hamster roll, but then I was like, we talked about Raw a lot. We talked about you like the Mandu games. So I'm gonna say it's not hamster roll. I also say it's probably not run, 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 since we talked about that a little bit and you didn't seem to react. I'm gonna go with witchcraft.
Okay. So, well, first
I
off,
also don't know
this.
if you play solo games, but like that would be if you played something a lot, it might be because you played it solo, maybe,
Yeah.
or
Okay.
Penguin Party because it's like something quick and fast. But
Well, okay, so this is funny. Well, first off, I've like read the rules for, I mean, it's not that it's super complicated, but I've read the rules for Run 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 a couple times, and it's been on my like, hey, like with my wife, like, hey, I want to play this, which we never got into it yet, so I haven't played that. And in general, like, well, there are so many unplayed games in my collection, but you were correct. but you were correct in your incorrectness, and
it
it's Hamster Roll. Yeah,
really?
I played that game so many times because it
There's no dexterity games on the shelf behind you that I
yeah.
can see. And so I was like, maybe, and like we
Oh.
talked about Ra, I'm like, well, maybe he's like placed like more heavy stuff. And you know, so,
It's
oh,
right
there it is.
there it
Now
is.
I see it. See, I purposely hidden for the question, so I couldn't spot it.
But no, yeah, we play that game a lot, and it's funny too because yeah, I don't know. It's my understanding. I don't know how many, times it's been like printed, but I think the original version, if I'm not wrong, was the wheel was even bigger. Like at what there was like a
So
monster
same
wheel.
size.
Oh, it's the same size?
So
Okay.
that I don't think it's been printed by any other language except for the version that they made.
Okay.
I think for the and so I that's a game I had never heard of, and I guess now some really good friends that I've met through, you know, board gaming that I always see at, you know, Origins and Gen Con and stuff. And so every Origins, we always get together at night. We always play games and just kind of hang out because we all don't get to see each other regularly since we all live in different parts of the country. And one of my friends in that group brought out Hamster Roll at Origins, you know, late one night. And, you know, most of us were like, what is this? Like, this is crazy looking. And so we ended up playing it. It's hilarious, and it's a super fun dexterity game. And so I immediately, when I got back home, went and tracked down a copy, you know, in Germany, and paid way too much money for it, way too much to ship it here. And I just had it, you know, in the collection, you know, for a few years, and played it, you know, with friends and stuff here. And finally, I was like, man, like I really should just contact them to see if this game can be localized, you know, for in English and us, you know, put it out. And so sure enough, you know, we ended up doing it. But yeah, the only thing, and that's definitely a game where we had them produce it, like at their manufacturer, because it's like a circular piece of wood with ledges, and yeah, we were not going to try to go recreate that and let them do their own thing. But one of the things, so the original, the wheel is the same size, but this game came out, oh, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, and this is pre kind of like Kallax revolution for a lot of board gamers. And so the original box was only about, I want to say it was like, it was between 5 and 10 millimeters. It's a perfectly square box, so high width the same, but it was about 10, 5, 5 to 10 millimeters too tall to fit into a Kallax. Because Kallaxes are perfectly cubed, you couldn't put it on its side, you couldn't put it face up, whatever. You know, there's no way you could store it in there vertically or horizontally, so you just had to keep it outside the Kallax. And so it was really important to me having a, you know, board game rooms in the office and game rooms with Kallaxes that it had to fit into a Kallax. And so we didn't want to change the size of the wheel, but we could. There was enough space in the original box. We could actually shrink the box down and eat up some of that just space to get it to where just enough. I mean, we pushed it as far as you could go and get that box shrunk down, and it now fits in with like a millimeter or two to spare. Like it just fits perfectly. But yeah, same size wheel. So we didn't change the wheel to make it fit. A lot of people thought like, oh, you're making the wheel smaller to make it fit into a shelf. Like actually, no, the box was just had a little bit of extra give in it, and we could just suck up that give, and it fits perfectly.
Nice. Maybe I don't know. Now that I'm looking at stuff, I just heard people talking about some kind of like homemade versions of the wheels
I'm
that
sure
are like
people have made
super big.
homemade versions.
So now that I'm looking, I'm like, okay, that's what I must have heard. 'Cause yeah, I'm looking at all these pictures, but yeah,
But the
nonetheless.
box is smaller, so there is, you know. You're partially correct, you know, in that it is smaller, but really it's only actually the box size a little bit smaller.
Nice. And a funny thing is, yeah, I mean, it is a huge wheel, and
Just had to take a quick break for a guest and the dog greeting that guest, and now we're back.
sorry about that.
No, it's honestly, it's a perfect timing because yeah, I was the transition with hamster roll was going to be thinking about animals, and I saw on social media that you had just had another rescue that has entered your household,
We did.
and we have a whole bunch of animals here, and we got three cats, a couple dogs, and then some birds too. But the cats, a lot, cats, they're cats, so they're going to be one of a million different things. But on the whole, like our three, they're pretty good when it comes to board games. Most people are like, you can't play board games around your cats. We haven't had I haven't had too many horror stories. There've been a couple times where they're, zooming around and just, pop on the table out of nowhere and knock
Right.
some stuff around, but that's very few and far between. There was one of the caps from my copy of Santorini went missing for like a good couple years because my cat just scooted away with that one really quickly and hit it somewhere. But that's about it. But we've got this one, our newest. He's not even, well, he's probably actually a year and a half now. He loves walking through the hamster roll wheel.
All right. That's awesome.
It's like his favorite thing. It's up. He'll see it moving around and just kind of hop
Just
on the
wants to walk through
table
it.
and wants to walk through it. So,
Oh,
well.
dude, that are sitting in the box, which is a normal, a usual
Oh.
cat thing, for sure.
Oh,
So.
yeah. Yeah. I definitely, as soon as I set a game up, I try to close up the box. Otherwise, the cats are in the box. But yeah, that's about it. But oh no, this is good. I feel like our conversation, with all things 25th century games was just like, I don't know. There are a lot of things I was wondering, and the way that you talked about them and your particular processes was really, really interesting. I've kind of got like basically more or less with all my other stuff. There's almost like a second interviews worth of stuff. So maybe in the future, and hopefully not all the way down at my 250th episode, because that would be very far in that future. We can maybe revisit some things and come back to them, because I think, I don't know, I think there's some fun stuff in here between animals and baseball and bocce and all sorts of stuff. But just for the sake of all of our time, to not turn this thing into like a 2 3 hour interview, would be kind of getting to the wrap up questions. And I've got like two, and the name of the show is Intertextual Experience. So I always want to leave, well, or allow you, the guest, to reflect on a text, and this could be anything. So by text, I mean game, book, show, movie, song, or anything else that has been on your mind lately.
Well, I feel like lately, all that's been on my mind is just work. We're pushing through like 15 different titles out of manufacturing right now. So it's been the last month, 2 months has been a nightmare. And all the import collection stuff hits you at one time, which is also kind of why this might be the last time we do the import collection as a whole, versus just peppering them in slowly throughout the year, because it is a lot of work when we get all of them at one time, do all the work for 10, 12 games at once. It's a lot of stress and weight on me, and then and Kate and Joel, who do a lot of the UX UI work on those things. It's just a lot at one time to happen. But the I don't know. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, I don't watch a lot of TV. I don't. It's not a big TV watcher. Watching Andor, I guess. I'm a huge Star Wars fan, so I try to keep up the Star Wars stuff, but I'm a little behind since I'm almost finished with Andor. So then a lot of people are like, "Oh, right, I watched that months ago," but I'm like, "No, I'm like just trying to finish it." So that's been a little interesting just to see the parallels of what's happening now, in the U.S. With some of the. It's interesting that some of the parallels in Andor that you can kind of start picking up here, what's going on here in the U.S. and kind of globally, but in particular here in the U.S. That's been kind of weighing a little bit on mind a lot lately. But also try to keep it light. as well. Like I watch a lot of baseball games, and so just baseball season is in full force, even though the Braves aren't doing super great. But I'll that's my nightly kind of check out, to not think about work for a bit. Usually watch some games, I'll have dinner with my wife, and then usually end up working after that, late at night, because around the world stuff starts kicking in. They start working their mornings or my evenings, late evenings, and so I'll start the cycle over and work a little bit in the evening. But yeah, I guess that's probably the only thing I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And yeah, I decently into Star Wars, but one of the ones that I definitely did watch the first season of and haven't touched season two yet was Andor, and I really, really enjoyed that. And I've heard nothing but good things about the second season as well. So once I'm able to check that out, I'll have to send you my thoughts on
Yeah,
that.
it's different from other Star Wars shows for sure. I mean, it's very slow paced, and it's just a lot different of a thing to follow than your typical, actiony, Star Wars stuff. But which is nice. It's good to have a wide range of things that can and do exist within this, TV and film, era of Star Wars.
Yeah. Cool. Well, honestly, well, when we do another chat, I'll ask some Star Wars specific questions, dog rescue questions, and then baseball and bocce questions. That's what our second round will be in
There
the
you go. Let
future.
me know.
But
We'll make it happen.
awesome. Okay, that's neat. So let's kind of get to the final question. And I know that, well, my intent, and this is going to be like a pretty quick turnaround for me. My intent is to publish this with a couple days left on your current Kickstarter project of Stargazers and Observatory. It sounds like all the stuff from the second import collection is kind of hitting at once. And then on Blue Sky, I've also seen a good amount of images in the past few weeks of some like teaser pictures for games, I think some titled and some not. But I guess what are, I mean, including the Kickstarter project, what are some of the things that you want to, shout out for 25th Century Games for people to look out for from you? Because it sounds like a lot. So I guess narrowing that scope, what should people be looking at?
Sorry, I was distracted. Like, I think my UPS delivery is hitting next to the office door down here. So Daisy is barking away. She is the newest addition. So, but
It's a dog-friendly show, no worries, all right?
yeah. So I like mute, and I was trying to get her to be quiet. I'm just looking at here. Yeah. And so yeah, I started doing this thing. It's a terrible name, but for lack of anything better, I started doing this thing called Fun Art Friday, where every Friday I share four images from four different games that are all games we have in the works. And I'm only sharing like the homegrown stuff, just because it will be new for people versus saying like, well, this game already exists, so it's, nothing really to look at that's new. But just kind of teasing out one, just we've got a lot of projects in the works. We've got a lot of great artists that are working on stuff, and so it's just a fun way to like showcase and start teasing out like, hey, this is some more illustrations from this upcoming game we're working on. And a lot of times, if we've announced that the game is coming, then I'll put the title of the game in there. Otherwise, it's like just unannounced game, but still show the artist, and the illustration work. So that's been a lot of fun, and kind of seeing people's just reactions to that, versus kind of waiting until it's done and be like, oh, here's this game we're gonna make. And so that's been fun, like a game called Wax Packs. I've been sharing some stuff from that lately. It's a baseball card collecting game we're going to release on Kickstarter on opening day, baseball opening day next year. And then but it's from a lot of stuff from a game called Mr. Oswald's Puzzle Society, which is the same designer as Stargazers, J.B. Howell, and art from Jackie Davis. So these beautiful like portrait animal, photos, which are really images that are really exciting to share. And I'm gonna share a lot of stuff from Andrew Bosley on a game called Cabana, just because they all have a lot of artwork in them, like a lot of different illustration work. So it's Nice to kind of tease them out over time. But Cabana is also is by Danny Devine and Stephen Aramini. And so Danny also is the one I'm working on with Wax Packs for that baseball card game. But yeah, so if you check out our socials every Friday, you'll see something, start teasing out some stuff. Try to put like a little nice little mix in there. And it's only four because I can put four photos into a blue sky or a Twitter post, and so that's why it's limited to four. And I don't want to like throw them all out there at one time and not have other fun content to share. So that's kind of what's happening there. But yeah, it's gonna be good. We've got some more stuff coming up. I'm excited to announce the next Kickstarter after Stargazers Observatory. That will be announced probably during Origins, and we'll put the follow page up for that. That's going to be a campaign with two games. The core campaign will be two games, and we'll have like an add-on or two. But both of those games are redos. They're actually older games we're bringing back. So hopefully, folks get excited about those two things. They look great. I'm excited for both of them. So. Hopefully, everyone else agrees. But yeah, that'll be fun to show off here soon.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, in the show notes for this episode, I'll be sure to include the current Kickstarter. And again, it's only going to be like a couple of days. And but I do know, or at least I've seen recently on Kickstarter that they've been doing more of a late pledge thing after the fact. So even if you're listening to it after when that closes, which I think is like 3 days from now, like the
Yeah,
30th.
it's this coming Friday.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's
so
a
the
so Kickstarter has a late pledge thing. So that will kick on immediately when the campaign ends, and that will run on there up until I get the pledge manager built within BackerKit, and then we'll migrate all the backer info out of Kickstarter into BackerKit, and then we'll do the there'll be a late pledge option over there once it gets contained in that world. But yeah, it'll be Yeah, even if this goes out in the week, like you still go to Kickstarter and still pledge, just as if you're backing it while it was live.
Yeah, I'll make sure that link's available, that your social media is available, that the 25th Century Games website in general is open. So buy games, buy mugs,
Yeah,
buy everything from there. And just
if you're at Origins or Gen Con, it's our next two shows we'll be at. So if you're there, stop by the booth and say hello.
awesome. Well, yeah, it sounds like between the fulfillment, current projects, new projects, always something, and it sounds like a particularly busy time. So thank you so much for taking your time out of all that to chat with me.
No, I appreciate the invite, Ron. I'm glad you reached out and we can make this work. This was fun, and we'll definitely do another round before we get to 250. So we'll try
Yes,
make it
okay.
52 or something. We'll figure
I'll
it
find like an appropriately numbered one for us for
out.
this. All
There you go.
right, well, have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Intertextual Experience, the most
Centurio
podcast about board games and any other text that they connect to. Thank you so much for spending your time here. Your support through listening to this podcast means everything to the show's success. If you enjoyed the project, consider giving us a rating or review and sharing it with any other people in your life you would feel would like it as well. Any further support, such as sending an email to say hey, following some of the show's social media accounts, or contributing any monetary support to help pay for some necessary subscriptions would be greatly appreciated. All of that information can be found in the show notes. Until next time, keep playing, watching, reading, listening, experiencing.